Hunting 101 program update.
Yes. What's that title?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Secretary Roby, Commissioners. PowerPoint coming up for you here.
And if you can't get PowerPoint, we can just
discover. Yeah, absolutely. I'll introduce myself, Clint Whitley, Outdoor Campus, Rapid City, naturalist there. And we wanted to take a minute to update you on a program that we are incredibly passionate about and finding some great success in and seeing some amazing impacts with our future hunters of South Dakota. And we're both doing this program a little differently, so we wanted to share some great things. I mean, we can give you some stats at another time, but those are easy to email and send. We want to share those things that are very difficult to send in an email and share some of the impacts that we have going on.
Just a quick history of this. It started by the late Keith Winterstein about 10 years ago.
And I'm going to have you just introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry. My name is Derek Lauer. I'm a naturalist at the Outdoor Campus in Sioux Falls. But anyway, it started by the late Keith Winterstein in Rapid City about 10 years ago. And when he first started this program, I was a little bit hesitant. I was a little bit hesitant on the program itself. I'm like, how is taking people in the field going to actually change or adapt our hunting methods and stuff like that? We used to always, at the outdoor campus, we taught hundreds of hunting classes. We would tell you how to actually hunt a deer, hunt a pheasant, hunt a goose, but we didn't actually show you. I myself am a hands-on learner. I mean, telling you how to field dress a deer, actually you doing it yourself and me helping you do it is totally different things. Ever since I started this program about 6 or 7 years ago, it's been a game changer. I personally believe it's one of the best, if not the best program the outdoor campus offers. We're actually taking people in the field, the whole process, showing them how to buy a license, I mean, how to get preference points, most important thing, how to gain access. Through the program, we hunt mainly private ground. We introduce them to the landowner. The landowners are a crucial part to our program, whatever. The landowners go over why and when and where they would allow people to hunt their land. I always tell people, treat a landowner with great property like you would want to treat your best friend or your spouse. I mean, like landowners will give scenarios on saying that someone such came here and he left a gate open or he left a pop can out on my property. Why would I allow hunting on my property? I have nothing to gain by doing that, stuff like that. So I always have my hunters write a thank you letter as well. Landowners say they'd much rather have that than a monetary, you know, gift in return for hunting the property and stuff like that as well. So I can't say enough things about this program. It's very time consuming. I first started with 20 participants by myself. I did all homeschool youth. Homeschool youth have a flexible schedule. It went phenomenal. I mean, these kids were telling me years later about how they took out their brothers and sisters and they took out their grandpas and stuff based off what they learned by them going out and stuff with the program. So, yeah, I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, the kind of the outlines look a little different compared to how we run that program, but that's the autonomy of our education staff, and that's what gives us some strength. But they may start with some in-classroom pieces of, I went through the North American model, I started Turkey 101 two nights ago, covering the North American model, talking about funding for game, fish, and parks, and knowing that this, why this class is free, that's very important to us. And I even share, if I could mold every hunter in South Dakota, this is what they would look like. They would have those things Derek's describing, and they would be involved. I talk about commission meetings, and like this, if you want to be heard and be involved, Facebook is not the place, this is the place to come and share your voice. And I sometimes have to take a step back and discussing with those 101 participants and realizing, oh, they are green. They are green with hunting, and a conversation two nights ago with one of those participants found out, like, oh, this is where I was going, and hearing them say, ask a question of, how much property do you have to be able to shoot, and, well, 40 acres, it doesn't matter. I mean, as long as it's legal to do such a thing, they think, oh, we're taking a step back. We're green. We're very green, and those people are just sponges. They absorb that information and are so excited to learn, and it's a great experience. So from there, we're doing some online scouting. I'm getting them hands-on with their firearms and spending some time at the range. And then we're getting that field experience. That's the primary thing where we really learn a lot. Getting that field experience that Derek's sharing, as well as in the field of, we have that animal on the ground, what do you do with it now? That's the big barrier. We're finding access is a barrier, firearms are a giant barrier, and a animal of, I don't know how to handle this thing. Those are the main ones that we're seeing. It's a scary world, and I always compare that to me walking into a golf shop. I wouldn't have a clue on how to buy a driver, and I would be taken advantage of. I don't know the language. I don't know the conversation to have, and I would be out of my element. So I think we can put ourselves in that shoes in how we approach our hunters. That there's a huge population of excited, wanting to participate in the outdoors. This is primarily in the recruitment portion of our R3 model, and our recruitment or R3 model of recruitment, retention, and reactivation of our hunters and anglers. Recruitment is primarily that. We are seeing between Derek and I's program a little uniqueness with this, that Sioux Falls is getting a little bit more of that youth and the families, and my class is primarily adults, and just ends up being that way. Not that we're marketing any different, I don't think, but it ends up being that way. Maybe it's the clientele of Sioux Falls and Rapid, and Ellsworth Air Force Base is a big factor in that. So we're getting a little different clientele in there, but we're seeing some very similar results. The other thing that we add to our goals is some advocacy for game fish and parks. I track to see how many people are buying licenses in subsequent years, and I know that if they didn't buy a license, I know they know how Game Fish Parks works. And I know that they are an advocate for hunters and anglers, because I talked to them about that, of how important it is to support this as a conservation effort. We're seeing lots and lots of young people come through our building, either as interns or young people just interested in conservation. Conservation is that term that's thrown out over and over again. How important hunting is as a conservation tool. So we've tried to educate them as this is important. This is a very important thing in managing our wildlife and our habitats. And hunters and anglers are the leader in providing that habitat, those conservation efforts. So yes, we do have some uniqueness in our program. And so we've got some great stories to share with you of some things we're seeing in each of our buildings.
Sure. And with myself, I grew up in a small town in northeast South Dakota. I mean, a lot of kids take hunting for granted. Now I live in the big city in Sioux Falls. Kids don't hunt anymore. I mean, hunters are aging out faster, and we're creating new hunters and stuff. I get a lot of parents say, oh, well, I know someone hunts. My kid really likes to hunt, but I have no clue on how to get them started. I like to focus more on the youth and the families. It's like Dr. Kirschman here making a Vikings fan. Vikings fans are created when they're young. They're not the wannabe, you know. You bleed purple when you're first born. So, I mean, that's why I like to get them started when they're young. By taking out the youth, I've had a lot of adults say, wow, that was actually all right. I didn't realize it was going to be that way. And then mom and dad want to go. A couple stories. During COVID, we had a lot of families move into South Dakota. Some of the families that I took out personally have never shot a gun, never seen a gun, didn't know what a gun was really, except on TV. Took out these families and started with their children, and children shot one, and I'm like, well, we can get an apprentice today if you want to give it a try too. And now some of these families are going West River, East River, buying all the leftover tags and stuff like that as well. It's skyrocketed. I took out another family from California. A little bit questionable. Mom was vegetarian. I know this probably ain't going to go over very well. She wasn't hunting right away, but her daughter harvested a deer. And she, once we started field dressing it, I took out the guts and stuff. And not a lot of people keep all of the insides. And she goes, well, what can you eat on the inside? I'm like, usually heart and liver. And she goes, what about the kidneys? I'm like, I don't know where a kidney is on a deer, you know. So we're going through there, and lo and behold, we found the kidneys and stuff. And she's talking about the tripe, and yeah, lo and behold, that family has taken off, and yeah, they've taken off remarkably. In Sioux Falls, we started off with deer, but then after the first year, we did turkeys as well. We have some great partnerships now with the city of Sioux Falls. They have a lot of well property around Sioux Falls, and it's been a game changer. It's close by. We're able to hunt there, and there are a lot of hunters out there. We also, with the bounty program, have taken out quite a few kids to go over the basics of trapping coons and skunks and raccoons and stuff like that as well. So those are our main staples that we do in the Sioux Falls area.
And thinking about some stories I wanted to share of some of my participants, I just wanted to put some names out there so you could put see a list of names. So those are quite a list of very unique names and amazing people, and I could just go on and on with the list of really neat people that I still hear from on a regular basis. But I wanted to start off with a specific story of Patri. She's in the lower left-hand corner there with one of our volunteer mentors. One of the early on hunts when I first started in 21 with one mentor, and we'll share about our mentor program with that as well. But Patri is a very professional individual, a intelligent person, and she is in a male-dominated field. And she wanted to speak the language. She wanted to not be an outsider in her career, so she said, I'm going to learn to golf, and I'm going to learn to hunt. And so she showed up at the outdoor campus not to learn how to golf, but to learn how to hunt. And she went up with our mentor, Brian there, and harvested her first deer, and 2-3 years later now, I get a call, I don't know, I suppose that was 6 months ago, from her, and she's having a conversation with her daughter, who has got that same intelligence level of, she's asking about hunting, and I was blown away. I don't know how to answer that. She's got an interest, and she's a 12-year-old girl, and wanting to do this thing, and I don't know where to start with. Now I'm introducing someone. So we had an outstanding conversation of creating normalcy in our home. And I work with all those adults and say that they've got 7, 8, 9, 10, 15-year-old kids at home. And it's probably hard to start with a 14-year-old kid in your home to start them in hunting. But when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, to create normalcy, that this is a normal thing that we do, and it's a part of our lives, and now in Patri's family, she's getting to pass that on and create a hunting family out of something that wasn't there before. Shaw Wei is there in the lower right, just an outstanding lady, had an amazing hunt. She is an absolute go-getter. She and I went out on a pretty late season hunt here this last winter, and she harvested her first deer. And if you're ever interested in having some high levels of emotion in watching someone shoot, it's taking someone new like this, and her confidence level was low to begin. It's like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do this. And in the process of working through that shot process, and she settled in on that deer and pulled the trigger, and she was shaking, and she was so proud of herself, and I was so proud of her, and the excitement there can only be understood if you were in that moment or if you've experienced that personally. And she has gone off to wander out on the ice this ice fishing season to go chat with other people. It's like, hey, teach me, and she has become an ice fishing fool, and she is a hunting fool. She is getting after it, and an amazing cook. She just recently became one of our volunteers at the outdoor campus because of this. Now she wants to come back and give back. Her schedule allows for that, and we're getting some really cool full circle things with her. I want to touch on another one. Hero is on that left that giant smile on his face there in the orange hat. He was an intern, and he is now writing for DJ Case and Associates, helping the Fish and Wildlife agencies across the nation learn how to communicate. I asked him to write that same reflection. Derek has his, and his was a 25-page paper that was so well-written, and I had to Google some words in there, but just the most incredible reflection on what that did for him was just very impactful, and he is off creating things that are flooding the, our industry of hunting and fishing. So it's a, I could go on and on and on, and there's so many of those people that have been just pioneering the way in our community in Rapid City, and some of them move away. They move away. There's one there that moved to Colorado, and I still get a question about hunting in Colorado. I don't know how to draw these tags, and you know, it's in person time. Call them up. Yeah, I'll help you out through that as well. But they're still contributing to Pittman Robertson dollars and being involved in that. And we see that with the Ellsworth Air Force Base. We get a lot of transient communities come in, and there's young airmen and women that don't know what to do with their time. This is a great place. They stop in the outdoor campus, and we get to spend a lot of time with those folks. And they might move away, but there's a lot of airmen that end up saying, I'm moving back to South Dakota, and this is where I'm going to retire when I'm all done. They visit a lot of bases, and South Dakota is one of those places that they get to plant their roots.
All right, and just to wrap up then, the future, we are, as you all know, we are building our expansion in Sioux Falls. My most exciting part about the expansion is we are going to have a processing room. 2 years ago in Sioux Falls, meat lockers did not accept carcass deer. People were left scrambling. Part of the 101 program is we show them how to process their deer. We've been doing it in our back storage area right now. We just throw a rope up in the rafters and we hang when we have a table back there, whatever. But now, with our new expansion going on, we're going to have a walk-in cooler and a state-of-the-art facility where we can actually process deer and show people how to do it as well. Numbers, we continue to add more mentors. We continue to add more landowners as well. When I first started, we hunted one property down in southeast South Dakota, right along the river, down there by Jefferson, South Dakota. And now we have about 12 to 14 different landowners we hunt. I have a team of 8 volunteer mentors that help take out hunters and do it all and stuff like that as well. Also, 3 years ago, something I always wanted to do, we started taking out disabled veterans. We got special approval, so we got permits for 10 disabled veteran hunts as well. I took out a handful this year, and it's been real rewarding. I took out some Vietnam vets that one guy lost his leg, one guy was shot 3 times, and hearing these stories about these guys, you know, they haven't been able to hunt since 1982. One of them has never shot a deer before, and it's been just hugely rewarding myself to be able to take these guys and give back a little bit as well. So we're looking to hopefully keep expanding our disabled vet program as well.
And Future 101 in Rapid City, also looking to grow and refine. I've got a few, a total of 7 different 101s. Hunt 101 is the staple. It's what we consider a good entry point. And I know that there's no question we have all of our deer tags selling out. I mean, we can sell our deer tags. And recruiting more and more deer hunters might be a question, though. Why do we need more deer hunters? Well, this is our entry point, and I am very passionate about this, where in 2020 things changed for the hunting community. 2020 created foodies, people that were incredibly interested in getting into hunting because they want to know where their food comes from. And I have an application for 101 where I get to see why they are wanting to join. It is like they're writing the same book. They all are saying they want to provide some of their own food, they want to be involved in what's going on in nature, and so they want to be involved in that. So we have this crowd that is moving from multiple states or tapping into old roots of a skill they'd like to learn. So this is a time I think we need to take advantage of it, pour the coals to it, that we have those people and we can funnel them into other avenues of the outdoors. not just know that, yeah, deer hunting is maybe limited. We can only get so many things and spend only so much time in the woods out hunting, but there's a thousand other things we can do in South Dakota. So we can get 50-100 applicants for Hunting 101, but for Waterfowl 101, I struggle sometimes. It's maybe 4, 5, 10, 12 people. But if I can get them into the 101s, there's been a time I've had to say to a participant, you don't need me anymore. No more 101s for you. You get out, you got it. And we have some great relationships with those that you don't need me. Get out. And now they're wives or spouses that are annoyed with me because I've sent them to Shields and Cabela's too many times to purchase a grinder, a gun, a ammo, this, that, and fishing rod. Nope, now I need an auger, now I need this. And so they're expanding into all these various areas of the outdoors. So I think now is the time to take advantage of that, and who cares if it's hunting deer or ducks or whatever. However their entry point is, that is how we were meeting participants where they're at. That is what they know. When they hear hunting, it's probably deer. So that's what they know, and we can help guide them into the opportunities in South Dakota. And I've even pushed them I've got participants that have gone elk hunting already in that short time of me being here. Elk hunting and pursuing, looking into lion hunting and all the various things that we can do. Also looking to grow our mentorship program as well. We couldn't do this program without them. Derek talks about how passionate those guys are and want to have conversations with your mentors all the time. And those guys and gals are so important. We've got a handful of staff as well that like to be a part of it. I think I've got 7 volunteer mentors, I've just added a couple, and then 5 staff members, fisheries, habitat, and law enforcement that are all helping with this program in there. Say when, not during the spawning season for fisheries, but in that time in the winter when things slow down for them, they get an opportunity to go out and spend some time in the field, or law enforcement is huge in my range days, helping with those, that they're critical for that. And last thing I want to share with you is just, I've used the word passion more times than I can count in the last 6 months talking about my program, and that's what this is. We are passionate about this program, and if I don't create a hunter, I want them to, I push my passion. Even on my worst programs that I teach, I let this passion come out, and it becomes addictive. So I try to instill that in on my mentors, and let them see that this is something worth being a part of. So I believe we're making a great impact. Thank you for all the support that you guys have all given us on this program and allowing us to run with it. Our directors are at the campuses are hugely important in that, and they're allowing us to be creative, allowing us to have some autonomy to create a program and develop it. So with that, if you have any questions or advice and what you'd like to see us approach with this Hunting 101 program, we'd love to hear.
Very good. Your passion and enthusiasm is definitely evident. Good job. Any questions from the commission? I do have just 2. When you talk about the landowners, how does that begin? Do you reach out to them? Is there already partnerships? How do we connect that?
A lot of them have been through the department, through wildlife complaints. I started with a gentleman down in southeast South Dakota that has been a chronic deer damage area. And so I went and explained to him, and he was hesitant, whatever, and stuff like that, because he didn't allow any hunting at all and stuff like that. He was hesitant. I said I'd be a GFP member going down there. And first year, we harvested 20 deer on his property. And after that, he goes, wow, this is maybe all right. And now, obviously, southeast had a lot of issues going on, but I just say that our program settled his deer issue. So, but a lot of it is through complaint areas or game wardens that know landowners that have some great habitat. Not a lot of big hunters harvest antlerless deer anymore. I explained to them we're trying to get first deer for these youth, and yet we should have great success in being able to access private land.
That's right. Some of the stuff happens so organically. I don't know how to answer that. Sometimes they just happen. It's the same way of any of the properties we all hunt. How did we get there. It's through a conversation. It's through just knowing and talking to people, and if people know you're a hunter, and then it just kind of snowballs. Or there was already Keith Winterstein had done a lot of work on that, and I utilized one of our previous COs, Bill Eastman. He took me around and helped me learn where Keith had taken people, and ended up on another one of his contacts recently this year. But the WDMs have been great in helping us connect with some of those areas of high need and getting into some places that you and I are never going to be able to go shoot some deer, be able to go be a part of. I know most of our properties are closed off too. They don't allow anybody to go hunt elsewhere on those properties. They just allow us to come in and do those. So it's kind of a unique opportunity, and hitting those private properties, I feel much better about how we're going about this program. I'm trying not to compete with our public land hunters. I want to hit some of those targeted areas of where we have those depredation issues.
And I have taken a family and cold knocked the door. So part of hunting for myself is just going up to a complete stranger's door and just knocking on the door and explaining what you're there for. I even say now, even at my age, I get butterflies knocking on someone's stranger's door and stuff like that. And I've had kids and families do this, whatever, and I say, yeah, 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to get told to take a hike. It's that one time you gain, and that's well worth it, whatever. So I like to have the participants sometimes try to find access, which is very challenging. I mean, most people in a big city don't want to do that. I mean, I grew up on a farm, so I know how to talk to farmers, but, I mean, it's tough to do that. So I like to just know that feeling on going to a complete stranger and asking for permission and stuff, too.
Very good. Well, you guys answered both my questions, so thank you. Anything else from the question? Secretary.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you both for being here and presenting that information. I remember talking to Keith Winterstein back in 2013, actually. I was brand new at the Outdoor Campus West talking about this program. And to watch how it evolved and turned into what it is today is pretty special. Pretty proud of the team here. Both of you, thank you so much for shepherding this along the way. It's really impactful. It really is. And you are changing people's lives with hunting. So keep that momentum rolling. It's a call to action, though, for other hunter mentors to get involved. We do need mentors more and more. That is the number one, I would say, need with something like this. So we can scale this program even at a larger scale. Scalability is always the issue. Instead of taking 20 hunters out a year, we want to take 200 hunters out a year. And to do that, we need more hunter mentors. So the call to action is great, but you are doing a fantastic job. I can't think of two better people to be leading the charge here than you two right here. So thank you for all you guys do, and let's keep that momentum rolling.
Very good. Job well done. Thank